Ladies and gentlemen, it is so good to be back yet again. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Sunday, June 22nd, 2014. We're coming up on the NBA draft, y'all, so we had to get another a draft podcast in here. We did one for football, so we got to do one for the National Basketball Association. It's a Sunday evening here, and hopefully we'll get this to you by later tonight, if not early on Monday. We have a very special guest joining the show for the third consecutive month, I believe. He's becoming a regular guest. Our draft analyst, expert, Mark Hicks, will be joining the show once again. Before we introduce him officially, again, hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Please find us on iTunes as well. Search for the podcast there, Hip Hop Sports Report, and we should show up in the podcast section. Please subscribe to the podcast, like it, rate it, subscribe to it, and leave comments, and any feedback is much appreciated, and because we're always trying to make the preseason podcast of the year even better. So I guess we'll go ahead and jump right into it. We don't want to waste too much time. Again, Mark Hicks joining the show for another edition of the Mark Draft. And if you missed our show in April, I'm going to let you slide on that one, but you know what I'm saying, go back and listen to it anyways, because there was a lot of good information on there about the NFL draft. The NBA draft is this Thursday night, and the Cavaliers have the number one pick. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to try to break down each team going through the lottery from 1 to 14, and Mark is going to tell us what he thinks each team should do in that position. Now, you know, trades and stuff like that, we can't really predict that, so we're going to like leave that out of it for the time being. But assuming the draft order stays the same, we're going to do a mock draft rather than a mock draft, because mock drafts are just based on hearsay and a bunch of misinformation and stuff like that. So Mark is going to tell us what he thinks each team should do in that position. So Mark, how you doing this evening, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well, cousin. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Ready to jump right into it. The Cavaliers, again, for the third time in 4 years, the top pick in the draft. Pissed off a lot of people, as we discussed back on the Cleveland show edition of the podcast. Cavs making headlines. Obviously, they hired a new coach this past week, David Blatt from Tel Aviv. He's coming over and bringing the Princeton offense with him, presumably. I believe he's about 55 years old, older guy. But, you know, he's got a lot of experience in Europe. He's one of the most accomplished basketball coaches in Europe. And he should command a little bit of respect, which is why I thought it was a pretty good hire, considering the realistic candidates that the Cavaliers were going after. They had Tyronn Lue and Alvin Gentry and some of these other guys. Gentry's more of a retread. Lue is an assistant coach with no head coaching experience. Still a pretty young guy, though. I felt like this team needed somebody a little bit older, though, with a little bit more professional experience. So I like that selection for the Cavs there. And then at the top of the draft, obviously the big news last week was Joel Embiid breaking his foot. As we predicted here on the podcast, we said it back on the Cleveland edition back at the end of May. Go back and listen to it. We said the Cavaliers cannot roll the dice on this kid, because as talented as he is, we don't know if he's going to stay on the floor. And lo and behold, he doesn't even get through the draft process without breaking his foot. And so now he's out 6 months to a year. So I think Embiid is still probably going to go somewhere in the lottery, and we'll discuss him in a little bit, but I think we can rule him out at number one, unless, Mark, you have some other thoughts on that. But beyond that, again, there's basically come down to Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker, two swingmen there at the top of the draft. Wiggins more of a defensive player and offensive player with incredible athleticism and a sky-high ceiling. Jabari Parker, a little more NBA-ready, a much more polished offensive game right now, may not be in the best condition as of right now, definitely not a great defender right now. Mark, you're running the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers are on the clock on Thursday night. What are you doing with the top pick?
Well, looking at their roster, and we discussed this in the Cleveland podcast, their biggest need has been small forward. From the time the former number 23, now number 6, took his talents to South Beach, we've needed a small forward, and they've had a whole bunch of what I call stiffs and bums in that position. So lo and behold, you have two guys that can play small forward that is coming out in this draft that are projected to be the number one pick. The best thing that could possibly happen was Embiid getting injured, at, like you said, as we predicted, because the first thing that I was thinking of, like, man, these guys are going to draft Embiid. And I'm just glad that from that standpoint that we don't have to worry about that. So Parker and Wiggins, and you pretty much hit the nail on the head in describing their games. For me, and I expressed this and at the Cleveland podcast, the Cavs are in a position where they need to win now. And honestly, if they whoever they select between the two, I'll roll with it because I think they're both talented players. For me, and for this mock draft for this particular team right now, I'm looking at Jabari Parker, and only because his offensive game is extremely polished. He can immediately be placed in that position and get you at least 15 points a game, which, I mean, there was no guarantees what you was going to get from small at the small forward spot from game to game. And just like we discussed earlier, you know, with Wiggins, you have all these other pieces around him, so he doesn't have to do too much. At Duke, he had to do everything, and it's more of a situation like Wiggins was in Kansas. He was surrounded by talented players, so he didn't have to do too much. He didn't have to take on the burden of carrying the offense, and neither would Jabari Parker here. So for this particular mock draft, I would take Jabari Parker at one. But just let me say that I've really been studying Andrew Wiggins' game since we had the Cleveland podcast, and honestly, regardless of which one we take, if they end up taking Wiggins, I'll be more than happy to, because at least this way they addressed the biggest need on this team. So for this case, Jabari Parker, but I'd be happy if they took Wiggins too.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that last point, Mark. Cavs fans, get excited. Get excited. There's no reason to not be excited heading into Thursday night, because the only question mark, really, that in my opinion, going into Thursday, was whether or not Joel Embiid was going to be healthy for the long term. And I think that question's been answered. Some people even seem to believe that the Cavaliers should still take Joel Embiid. I personally never even believed that he was the lock at number one that everybody made him out to be anyway. Because, I mean, people are acting like this guy was the second coming of Anthony Davis. He only averaged 11 points and like 6 or 7 rebounds a game, maybe 8 rebounds at the most per game at Kansas before he hurt his back. So I don't really understand why the basketball community seems to be just devastated by this injury. Like, this is not Anthony Davis. This is not Shaquille O'Neal. He's a very talented young player. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think that Joel Embiid was leaps and bounds ahead of Parker and Wiggins like everybody else made it seem. Anyway. And then he got hurt, and so I think that question was answered. Like, you can't roll the dice on this guy, because if he got hurt in high school, he got hurt in college, he got hurt in a pre-draft workout, I don't want any parts of him as a professional. And he hasn't been playing ball that long, so to me, that just signifies that his body is not up to the grind of playing professional basketball, because he's been at this for only 3 years or so, but physically, he can't seem to hold up for whatever reason. And with his back and with feet, those are two injuries that you don't really want to mess with, especially with big men. So that question's been answered. As far as Parker and Wiggins, again, get excited, because these guys, I don't see a scenario in which they're not both all-stars in 5 years. And I said on Twitter a few weeks ago that I think it's Jabari Parker's destiny to average 25 a game in the NBA at some point. I mean, he's just too skilled offensively. So the Cavaliers cannot mess this up. I mean, unless they take Embiid anyway, or unless they trade the pick, or they do some wacky thing like take Dante Exum or something, which they won't do, there's no way you can screw this up, I don't think. I mean, Wiggins, to me, he's Paul George with a higher upside. I think Parker is a little bit more of a combo between Carmelo and Paul Pierce, from what I see. But you cannot go wrong with either one of these guys. The possibility of the Cavs trying to swing this pick and something else to Kevin Love is out there. I don't really see that happening, though, because there's no way to guarantee that Kevin Love is going to stick around for the long term, as we discussed on the podcast a few weeks ago. So I don't really think that's an option. And then, so if they're keeping the pick, again, I would take Wiggins, because I think Wiggins has a higher upside over Parker. I think if Wiggins pans out. I think his ceiling is a little higher than Jabari's, and Wiggins is, he excels on both ends of the floor, and the Cavaliers were a terrible defensive team last year. And but to your point, Andrew Wiggins is not going to have to come in here and average 20 out the gate necessarily, because you have Kyrie Irving, you have Deion Waiters for now anyway, and these guys are aggressive guards that like to shoot the ball. So Andrew Wiggins can just come right in and play his game. If he goes to Philly or Milwaukee, they're going to be expecting him to average 20 as a rookie. Those are really high expectations, but I don't know if he can, if that's going to be the best spot for him. So either way, I think the Cavaliers work out with this pick. I think the LeBron factor is obviously looming. There's an outside chance, Mark, that 2 weeks from now, 2 or 3 weeks from now, LeBron James could be a Cleveland Cavalier. I don't know. I'm not saying it's likely, but I mean, I think there's like a 5 or 10% chance of that, at least, you know. And here's my theory. And before we move on from the Cavaliers, I came up with this theory last night, and I wanted to float it past you, Mark, and see what your thoughts were. Okay. So the Cavaliers have this top pick. Let's say they take Jabari, as you say that you would take if you were them. Now they have Jabari Parker, and they have Kyrie Irving as their cornerstone pieces going forward. You know, say what you want about, you know, Tristan and Deion. They may, some people like them, some don't. But we know Kyrie and Jabari aren't going anywhere. Those are your cornerstone pieces. Both of those guys attended Duke University, right? Then you have the LeBron factor. Then you have the fact that Dan Gilbert is willing to throw an ungodly amount of money at top college prospects and give them a presidential role in the organization. Maybe Mike Krzyzewski is a little bit, you know, not tired, but let's say he's satisfied with the job that he's done at Duke for these last a billion years. I don't know, however long he's been there. Maybe Dan Gilbert places a call to Mike Krzyzewski and says, Coach K, here in Cleveland, we have Kyrie Irving, one of your former pupils. We also have Jabari Parker, another one of your former pupils. We can still get LeBron James in here. We have the cap space. LeBron, we think LeBron wants to come back. And we know he'll come back if you're here, because you guys have a great relationship from your USA basketball days. We have a respected coach in place. Coach K, you can come in, be the president. LeBron James, you can come back. You're here with Coach K, with Jabari and Kyrie Irving, and now this is the new mafia, not the Miami mafia, this is the new Cleveland mafia, with Coach K, Kyrie, Jabari, and LeBron. That's just a thought. I don't know. It sounds far-fetched, I know, and I just made it up in my head, so I'm not basing this off any actual reporting, so I'm not a reporter, y'all. I'm just making this up. But is there any possible way that this could ever happen, Mark? I mean, on any planet, is this possible?
I think as far-fetched as it may sound, and we could be all, it could be one big pipe dream, is some validity to that. I really believe that bringing in, I mean, that's why they left this the presidency of the organization open, and mainly because they want to put a big name in there to run, to basically oversee and run the basketball operations. And by doing that, by strategically putting in, you know, two former Duke players and possibility of bringing having LeBron come back. We talked about this before, the fact that this is now tailor-made for him to come back, because you guys now have a young roster. I think last year they were the second youngest roster in basketball. And you put that with a guy who with a lot of talent, and you put that with the guy who's the best player in the game, and you have an ability to not, and a ton of cap space. Even if you sign him, you still have a lot of flexibility, a lot of cap space. You're able to win multiple titles in a rundown Eastern Conference for many, many years after that. And plus, like you mentioned, you have a coach there that's who is well respected not only around the league but around the world, basically. And the type of system that he runs is almost similar to what the Spurs do. It predicates them being able to move without the ball. It predicates you can't focus on one guy. All five guys who's on the court at the same time has the ability to score. And I think that's the main thing. And one thing we've learned from this Miami and Spurs series is the fact that you need people who can play off the ball and who you know, their offense is not situated with just isolation. ISO to the left, ISO to the right, that type of thing. And it's not just jacking up threes. It's about moving around with the pass, moving without the ball, and getting the easiest shots you can possibly get. You look back on that San Antonio series, they were getting a lot of easy buckets. And that's the reason why everything that Miami was doing was so difficult. And I think that's the reason why LeBron, in essence, wants to leave, because he took all the burden himself. If you go to a team that plays team basketball where they're able to move the ball around and he doesn't have to be the one to dominate the ball all the time, and he can run off screens and he can do attack the basket in different ways other than just using the dribble by himself. It takes so much wear and tear off of him personally, and it allows him to play longer in this league. So I think it's a win-win. And from your standpoint of Coach K, there's no other coach, you know, from a college standpoint that he respects more than Coach K. So it, as far-fetched as that may sound, I think that's something that Dan Gilbert probably in the back of his mind is probably looking to do, or will look to do in the near future, especially if everything falls the way, you know, we discussed it. So,
yeah, and again, I just completely made that up. there's no real validity to it right now. But I'm just thinking, like, you put those Duke guys together. LeBron respects Coach K. They have a relationship from Olympic basketball. It's kind of like a chicken and egg kind of thing. Like, if LeBron comes back, and then with Kyrie and Parker, and then you go get Coach K, I think Coach K might be enticed to come to that situation. But on the flip side, if you get Coach K in there first with Kyrie and Jabari, and then and a bunch of money, you know, you're going to throw a bunch of money at him because Dan Gilbert's not cheap. He's a lot of things, but we know he's not cheap. So then you have Coach K in place first, and then I don't know which one you have to get first, but I think if one of those guys were there, if the Cavaliers could secure LeBron or secure Coach K, I think the other piece could come. So just a thought, just throwing that out there. Let's move on. We've got a lot of other teams to get to. The Milwaukee Bucks, number two pick. I think this one's pretty academic at this point with Jabari Parker being off the board. Mark, what say you, if you're John Hammond running the Bucks, what happens there?
Without a doubt, I'm taking Andrew Wiggins. And the reason why is because the main thing that the Bucks need is talent. I mean, you really can't go wrong with that pick. And while it's the Joel Embiid injury was great for the Cavaliers, it sucked for Philadelphia, who's coming up next, because, you know, and I'll get to that when it comes, but, you know, they were thinking, you know, taking one of those top three guys, and now you're looking at, you know, with him being gone, everybody being too, Embiid being gone out of that top spot, everything else is all out of whack as far as the rest of the draft. So if I'm the Milwaukee, without question, I'm just taking the best talent out there. So regardless if it's Parker or whether it's Wiggins, whoever Cleveland passes on, that's who I'm taking if I'm Milwaukee. It fills so many different needs, but most importantly, it fills a must-need superstar role in that area. They just don't have anybody who they can hang their hat on. And the best thing about Wiggins, if you get Wiggins, you don't have to start him off the three, which you have some other players and front court players that you need to play. You can actually start him off the two, even though you have O.J. Mayo. O.J. Mayo is a guy you can bring off the bench. Or in this particular case, if you want to get somebody else, you can always get somebody else to take over for Andrew Wiggins. But Andrew Wiggins can start out the two, and he may, in long term, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, if he gets, you know, bigger and stronger, he may eventually slide to the three, but you don't have to force him there. You can start him out the two. So you have him and Brandon Knight is in your backcourt. You are have a pretty decent backcourt, an athletic backcourt, if nothing else. So he's the best talent that's on the board at that time. That's who I'm going to take.
And I think that Milwaukee is – I think you're right on the money again where you say that they need talent anywhere they can get it. This was probably the least talented roster, arguably, next to maybe the 76ers last year. And it showed in their record, you know what I'm saying? So Milwaukee absolutely needs the talent. Wiggins brings talent in abundance. With a huge ceiling, as we already discussed. I think Parker is a little bit of a better fit in Milwaukee, actually, because he's not far from Milwaukee, and he's from Chicago, so that's just a stone's throw away from Milwaukee. And I feel like Milwaukee needs some immediacy with their improvement And again, not that Andrew Wiggins is a project, because I think that misconception's out there too. And that he's not a killer, which go to hiphopsportsreport.com to see the article on what it means to be a quote unquote killer in basketball. I hate that phrase. But Wiggins, he's not as polished as Jabari right now, and I think most would agree with that. So I think Jabari can come in. And Milwaukee, this is a team that, the way they structured their team, they were actually trying to compete and make the playoffs this year. They called themselves, you know, they went out and spent money on O.J. Mayo and some other guys. Like, they actually thought that they had a shot to compete for a playoff berth this year with the team that they had. So, and John Hammond's job is probably not long, you know what I'm saying, if they don't show some immediate improvement. So I think Milwaukee would probably rather have Jabari Parker. I think he's a little bit of a better fit. But I think that Wiggins works, and I don't think they can go the Philly route from last year where they picked Nerlens Noel and sat on him for a year just waiting for him to get back and deliberately stunk for a year. I don't think that's an option for Milwaukee. But it could be for the 76ers again at three, considering that they did it last year. Is they're very interesting. They're the most interesting team in the draft probably right now, because as you said, they were kind of on the outside looking in now with the three pick, and they also have the 10th pick in the draft. They've been dying to move up, rumor has it anyway, to even up to one with Cleveland to take Wiggins. I don't think the Cavaliers should entertain any deal like that, because they don't need two 19-year-olds necessarily coming in that they're going to build their franchise around, not two more young kids. You know, they don't need that. And Thaddeus Young is a nice ball player. He's been mentioned in these discussions, but I like Thaddeus Young, but I don't think that's a great idea either. So you bring in, rather than making that deal, Philly, let's just say they're stuck at 3-10. With the third pick, they could go Embiid and sit on him like they did Nerlens Noel last year. Maybe Nerlens Noel is their de facto draft pick this year, and then they got to wait, you know, maybe to the end of the year or next year to get Joel Embiid. They did have the Rookie of the Year, Michael Carter-Williams, playing point guard. Now there's speculation that they could go Dante Exum at three, who is an Australian point guard who really wowed a lot of people in some of the under-19 leagues and I think the Nike camps and stuff like that. So that's an option for them as well if they're not able to move up into the top two and get either Parker or Wiggins. Personally, I think Exum is a little too similar to Michael Carter-Williams as far as his game and his position. I think they're drafting Exum. I think that they're probably willing to move Carter Williams, who just won Rookie of the Year, although he shouldn't really be praised for that, because that was probably the worst rookie class I've ever seen. And again, they have new ownership in Philly, and they have a young GM, so I don't know how long that new ownership is going to be patient and willing to wait around on the GM there in Philadelphia. So if you're running the Sixers, who do you take at three, Mark?
All right. Looking at their roster, like we were talking about, the new GM, I believe his name is Sam Hinkie, and he wants to make a splash. And I think now, because of the Embiid injury, I think he's going to do whatever he can to try to move up, because they want Wiggins. I mean, it's no secret who they want. Of all these players in the draft, that's the guy they want. And like I said before, the Embiid injury really, really screwed up the Sixers, because they were trading everybody. They were mounting up draft picks, and they were tanking on purpose just for this situation, so they could get one of these guys. Now that one of them fell out the sky, and basically is not even looked at in the top three, and the first two guys are going to be gone. I mean, if you look at what's coming up in their draft for them, they not only have 3-10, but they have, I think, five picks in the second round, like 32, 39, 47, 52, and 54. They need wing players, twos and threes, but honestly, there's nobody worth taking that up there. For me, and you might fall out of your seat on this one, but for me, I'm not taking Embiid there. He's still too high of a risk. And plus, you already got Nerlens Noel, who was another injury risk. And you're gonna try to put him at center. You're gonna need scoring at some point from somewhere on that roster. You're gonna need some type of scoring. For me, I'm gonna look at rolling the dice here. And even though he's injured to a certain degree, I still like his game enough that he's going to make a splash in that city at that time. And I'm taking Julius Randle with the third pick and putting him in the Sixers. And the reason why I'm doing that is because he's explosive. He's an explosive player offensively. And the whole thing about his injury and the fact that he may miss summer league and all that stuff, he's not injured enough to point to the point where I think his talent should be overlooked. To me, he's one of the most, if not the most talented power forward coming out in this draft. And for me in this particular case, and you got Michael Carter Williams who can't shoot. You got a whole bunch of other guys who really can't shoot. You got Thaddeus Young, who's probably their most consistent player, who you rotated between the three and the four. You got Nerlens Noel coming off on off an injury who can't score. I mean, they need somebody who can score. And one thing Julius Randle can do, he can turn the ball over, as you saw with Kentucky, but he can definitely score the basketball. He can put the ball in the hoop in a whole bunch of different ways. And if I have that type of a big man player, I mean, it just makes Michael Carter Williams' job a lot easier. So, and it doesn't make sense for you to draft Exum like you was talking about, because they're both, him and Michael Carter Williams are basically the same guy, with probably Exum having a little bit better outside shot. But for the most part, they're basically the same guy. And for me, I got to get scoring. Julius Randle is the perfect candidate for this particular team at this point, because now you keep Nerlens Noel at the five, you slide him down to four. If you want to keep Thaddeus Young and move him and have him at the three, that's fine. You got Michael Carter Williams in your backcourt, and with all these other picks, the 10th pick we will get to later, and all these other picks that they have, they can bolster their roster. They really can do a good job of bolstering their roster. So for me, the splash would be Julius Randle. I don't know what you think, but that's where I would go.
That's a little bit of a reach there, I think, by most people's standards. I think most people have Randle in the 6, 7, 8 range. Julius Randle, for those of you who don't know, he was diagnosed with a broken foot just a couple of weeks ago. This is the broken foot draft. We had Embiid broke his foot, Randle broke his foot, Jabari broke his foot in high school. I don't know what this is. This is the broken foot, you know, class, I guess. But Julius Randle, he's an interesting player. I like him. I like Julius Randle because he likes being big. He's a big wide body, and he likes being a big man. I like big men that like being big men. I don't like big men that like to shoot 25 feet from the basket all the time. I don't like that typically, unless you're Dirk. You know what I'm saying? If you ain't Dirk, you don't need to be doing that. I like guys that like to be big, that like to get after it on the glass, and Julius Randle will rebound all day and all night, and I love that about him. He's physical. He's a pretty good athlete. He's drawn some comparisons to Zach Randolph. He's also drawn some comparisons to Charles Barkley, which is kind of funny because, you know, you have him going to Philadelphia. That's my boy, Charlie Barkley, man. He's one of the most unique players in NBA history, Charles Barkley is. So I don't know if he's quite Charles Barkley. What made Barkley special was he was an incredible athlete. And Julius Randle is a very good athlete. He's not Charles Barkley athlete. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't know if that comparison is accurate, but he's also not Zach Randolph athlete either. You know, he's not Zach Randolph can't jump over a bag of nickels. You know what I'm saying? So Randall's a little more athletic than that. So I think he's good, but you have to watch out for those short square ball players, that as I like to call them. Julius Randle, he's a short square cat. You got to watch out for those cats. You know, those DeJuan Blair type cats. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, a lot of times those guys don't pan out because they struggle with length, and we saw Randle struggle with length. Julius Randle also only goes one direction. I think he's left-handed. He only goes left all the time, and so he's gonna have to straighten that out. Hopefully you're not getting chased by the cops right now, Mark.
No, you know, somebody is though. Welcome to Cleveland, baby. Welcome to Cleveland.
Right. It's like that in these streets. Yeah, it's like that in these streets. I like Randle. I understand why you would make that selection. So that brings us to the Orlando Magic. And now the $64,000 question is, how far does Joel Embiid fall? You and I agree. You know, we didn't question Embiid's talent, but this injury stuff, somebody's going to have to roll the dice on them. You have Orlando here. They have a center. They have Vucevic. And he's pretty good. He's a good rebounder, solid, you know, guy on the block, but nothing special to write home about. they're rumored to go at Dante Exum. If I'm Philly, I'm probably looking at Dante Exum at four anyways, because I like his size. I think it takes Victor Oladipo off the point, which I think they experimented with that last year. Jacques Vaughn did, the coach, and that was a disaster. I don't think Oladipo is that type of player. So you take him off the point, you put Exum at the point, and then you can ship Jameer Nelson out finally, and you go forward with that as your backcourt of the future. And that backcourt has a lot of defensive potential between Exum and Oladipo with just their physical gifts and their size. Exum's is like 6'6". Point guard kind of guy, and Oladipo can handle it enough to where he can be a little bit of a combo guard in a pinch kind of thing. It depends on what they want to do with Oladipo. If they want to make him a one or a two, I don't know, but maybe they roll the dice on Embiid because he's got the highest upside of anybody left here. The other thing to keep in mind about the Magic is they, like Miami, are a destination for free agents. So even though Orlando has two lottery picks here, they can maneuver some stuff through free agency with some cap space and actually make that work for them. A lot of teams save up cap space, but then they can't do anything with it because nobody wants to play in those cities. Orlando doesn't have that problem. So that's always a possibility there. Maybe you can afford to roll the dice on Embiid, knowing that you can always sign somebody to come in and supplement that talent if he doesn't really pan out. So if you're running the Magic, Mark, what say you at four?
I would say exactly what you were saying. There is the possibility, and this may come down, I mean, because as you know, Orlando is not going to win anytime soon, so they may just go ahead and take that risk and go Embiid here. But for me, and you hit the nail right on the head, you got Jameer Nelson, who's 31. He's at the end, pretty much at the end of his career, and I think he's had a pretty good career considering where he was picked and all the different playoff games and everything that he's been through. But they need a point guard, and it's pure and simple, they need a point guard since day one. The whole Victor Oladipo experiment put him at point guard, just like you said, and I remember them saying that, and I thought that's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life, especially when you saw him playing the two guard at Indiana, and I mean, just because he was able to handle the ball to a certain degree and create his own shot, to me that did not make him a point guard and then have the ability to set other people up in the offense. So their biggest need is point guard, to me, hands down, even more so than the center. They went down the center road twice. They went with Dwight Howard and Shaquille O'Neal. I don't think any of the Magic fans want them to see it go through another situation because let's just say Embiid ends up being great, and he may jump out of there, go free agency, and go somewhere else that whenever he finally develops and becomes the force that everybody thinks he could be. For me, they need a point guard to set up the offense. They don't have one. They need one. For me, I'm taking Dante Exum because he offers so much versatility both offensively, and with him and Oladipo in the backcourt, defensively they will set the tone. And with Exum's size, he's able to guard the twos, while Victor Oladipo, being shorter at 6'4", but taller than most point guards, he's able to guard the one. So it just makes it that much easier. And they're both athletic. They both get to the rim. They both can create off the ball for other people. So it's almost like a perfect match for them. So for me, I'm going Dante Exum just as much as you would. And forget about the big man thing. That will come later. They have some pieces and parts, but they're not going to be contending anytime soon. So, but to your comment, it's a possibility they could go Embiid there because of the fact that they're not winning anything no time soon, and they may want to build for the future, and they may want to start with the big man. But I'm going Exum here because he's more talented and he fits a huge need for them.
All right, and I do think that's a great pick for the Orlando Magic. At four, don't overthink it. Don't roll the dice on Embiid. You get your point guard of the future. You know it's a point guard league, y'all. I mean, if you don't have a good point guard, lots of luck. You know what I'm saying? So go ahead and get your point guard of the future. Get Dante Exum, pair him with Oladipo, and you're good to go in that backcourt. Moving along, Utah Jazz with the fifth pick. Utah, they have young players at pretty much every position. They have Enes Kanter and Derek Favors up front to go with Gordon Hayward, who I believe is a restricted free agent this year, so he could bounce on them. And then they also have Trey Burke and Alec Burks in the backcourt there in Utah. So basically, with all these young pieces, they really need to figure out who it is they don't want. Who are they going to give up on in Utah? So If you have the fifth pick and you were the Utah Jazz, Mark, what would you do there?
I'm looking at their situation. Their front court, like you said, with Favors, and you have Cantor. Gordon Hayward, Hayward, if you keep him, and I think they're going to do whatever they can to try to keep him without overpaying him, of course. So I'm looking at, for me, they need scoring in the front court and versatility in the front court still. So for me, I'm taking Noah Vonleh from Indiana as a power forward. And if I need to move somebody, I'm looking at Favors more than Cantor, because although I like Favors a lot, I just think that the future of the center position is Cantor, and I don't think the way they want to play basketball, Utah does, they want to get up and down the court, and I don't think Favors, pardon the pun, Favors that type of transition game. And you got Burks, and you got Trey Burke in the backcourt. They want to get up and down the floor, and I think Vonleh, his ability to, for his mid-range game, his three-point game, all that opens up a whole bunch of versatility. So I think that's where they should go, and go with Vonleh at five.
Does Utah have a coach yet?
What's that?
Does Utah have a coach yet?
That's a very good question. I think they do have a coach. I think the only one who doesn't have a coach is the Lakers. I think they're the only ones who officially don't have a coach.
Quinn Snyder.
Yeah.
Where was he? Did he coach in Missouri? Where did he coach?
I want to agree with you. For the life of me, I'm drawing a blank because I know where he coached before. I'm drawing a blank.
Hang on. We'll get to the bottom of this. No. He did coach in Missouri. That was years ago. That was 99 through 06. And then he's been bounced around as an assistant since then. He was most recently
with the Hawks, I think.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, wow. I didn't even realize they made that hire. That just kind of happened. I don't even know what he's going to be running there. But Noah Vonleh. Well, first of all, let me just say this. I think most people would agree that in a perfect world, Jabari Parker, who is a Mormon, would be playing professional basketball for the Utah Jazz. I think the Utah Jazz fans would love that. I think the organization would love that. And I think they would love to move up and take him. And again, the Embiid injury kind of screws that up for them as well, because now they're going to have to move into the top two, maybe up to one, in order to make that happen. Whereas before, they could have had a shot at him if they moved into the top three. I think Utah, they need to nail this pick. I think it's really pivotal for them because they have all these young guys and none of them have really shown any type of real ability to make a significant impact at the NBA level, with the exception maybe of Gordon Hayward. They need to nail this pick. Noah Vonleh, he's a nice player. He reminds me a little of Tristan Thompson watching him. He's about the same size, 6'9", really tenacious on the glass, not a lot of athleticism or explosiveness, and he's got a little bit of a more advanced jumper than Tristan, maybe, although he didn't take a lot of them at Indiana. Vonleh, he might work out for them. He just looks like a guy to me. I'm not saying that they shouldn't take him. He could be a solid rotation piece, but, I mean, considering the star power in this draft, I don't know if I would go that route if I was Utah. I mean, I don't see Noah Vonleh being a star at any point. And I think there's other guys that have a shot at turning into an all-star player. So and with that in mind, that brings us to the Boston Celtics at 6. They've been rumored to also be a possible destination for Kevin Love. And we know that Boston loves their superstar ball players as well, as they've had 1,000 of them throughout their history. And so now they're basically stuck with Rondo and a bunch of spare parts. I feel like Danny Ainge needs to decide once and for all if Rajon Rondo is going to be the future of this team or not. I think Rondo still has a couple years left on his deal. He was rumored to have almost been traded to Houston last year, which I think would have been a great move by the Rockets. But if Danny Ainge is going to go forward with Rondo, he needs to make a firm commitment and start putting significant pieces in place, because Rondo's like 28 years old. You know, he's not young, per se. He's in the prime of his career right now, so they need to make a move happen. If Kevin Love is the destination, then they need to throw everything in the deal for Kevin Love and make that happen. If not, then they have to make something happen with this pick. I think Aaron Gordon's a possibility. Marcus Smart's a possibility. But they need to make that decision about Rondo and then go from there. Mark, if you're Danny Ainge, what are you doing at 6?
Okay. Now, for me, I'm looking at their roster, and looking at Rondo, I believe he has one more year left on his contract. If I'm not mistaken, I think I got around $13 million. So you're absolutely right. They have to make the decision on what type of team they're going to be. Now, if you make the deal for Kevin Love, that helps out in the fact of keeping Rondo, because now Rondo sees that you're able to trying to do something in Boston and try to make a quicker fix than trying to know a long-term plan. But for the sake of argument, and I'm looking at who's left on the board, if they go Kevin, this pick will determine whether or not they make the case in trying to get Kevin Love there and all this other stuff, because. And answer your question about Rondo if they want to keep him long term. Me, I'm looking at where they are. They're going to basically have to start over, in my opinion. I think they won't be able to get Love. I don't think they're going to be able to keep Rondo there. I think they're going to trade Rondo, if not before the season starts, by the trading deadline, so they'll get something for him. So if you're going to start over, they might as well start over with the big man. And in this case, Joel Embiid is still there. They're going to have a long-term plan. They're going to have plenty of opportunities to work with him and make sure he's healthy. There's no rush to do it. I think that would be the perfect spot for them, and they have a ton of draft picks coming up in the next few years where they can build around him. So they'll start with the centerpiece, you know, a la Robert Parrish, a la Bill Russell. They start with the big man and work their way around him. So I'm going Embiid at 6.
Very possible landing spot for Joel Embiid. We know Danny Ainge likes to make splashy moves too. I think that's very possible. He's still on the board. He's still in play, and he's got too much talent to just keep slipping. And you know, they have Kelly Olynyk, who's a nice player, Sullinger, who's a nice player, but those guys would probably be better served coming off the bench on a decent team. Joel Embiid would be the future. And as you said, they have a bushel of draft picks coming up the next couple of years in Boston, so they can take their time with this rebuild and do it the right way with Embiid. At 7, you have the Lakers. The Lakers have also been rumored to trade out of the spot, much like the Celtics have been. And I think Kobe could be putting that pressure on him, because you know how Kobe is. He's not around for the rebuild, obviously. He's trying to win ASAP. He wants to get that team at least back in the playoffs and back watchable again. They got a lot of expiring deals coming up, the Lakers do. A lot of expiring contracts to play with. And Steve Nash, one that's notable. I think Pau Gasol's deal is up this year, I believe, as well. And Kobe's, I think, he only signed a 2-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. So they have a lot of cap space going into next offseason. But this year, the Lakers are still pretty tied up. So I think they'll be a big player come trade deadline. But they could move this piece in order to get right now. To me, the Lakers... there's one guy that I see that's a perfect fit for the Lakers. His name is Marcus Smart out of Oklahoma State. He's a competitor. He's a bigger point guard. They say he can't shoot. I think he's a little bit of a shooter than people give him credit for. He's a little streaky right now, but I think he can get that consistency. I think if Kobe Bryant takes Marcus Smart under his wing and teach him that aggressiveness, that assertiveness that Kobe has, and that mean streak, if he can instill that in Marcus Smart and take him to Kobe school, so to speak, give him the Kobe system. I think if you get Marcus Smart to Kobe system, I think you can have a star on your hands in Los Angeles. But let's say you're Mitch Kupchak now. What are you doing with the Lakers?
I'm taking Marcus Smart. You just pretty much hit it the nail on the head, and great minds think alike. So that's where I'm going. Marcus Smart, to me, you're not going to get much more of a competitor in this draft. And I think that type of energetic, passionate person to run in the backcourt with Kobe, I think that's the type of person that Kobe wants. He don't want a mild-mannered guy like Steve Nash running the point. He wants somebody who can match him in competitiveness. And I think the two of them together, even though Kobe's on his last leg, I think that's what's going to drive him at this point. He's going to, like you said, take this young guy under his wing and really push him to the point where all of his talent will come to the forefront. He could eventually, if not like a Jabari Parker or Wiggins at the top of the draft, he could very well be your rookie of the year, and that's because of fit and the fact that he's going to get a ton of chances to make plays there in L.A. because there's not much else around him besides Kobe, and the two of them are going to push each other. So, to me, he has Los Angeles Laker written all over him. the first time I saw him play, I was like, he's a Laker because of the type of, or at least this unit of Lakers with Kobe, because he's the type of guy who has that mental drive and passion like Kobe does. The only thing is he has to channel that. And at, you know, when he's near 19 to 20, you're gonna be a little reckless. I think when you get in the right environment and you get the right people around him, he's gonna turn out fine. And I think with Kobe mentoring him, he'll be fine. He'll be a fine player for that.
It's very seldom that you see the Los Angeles Lakers picking in the top 10. However, a staple of the NBA draft is the Sacramento Kings picking in the top 10. They pick between 5 and 10 every year. Every year. So here we are again, Sacramento, the one team that has the most talent every single year. You talk about college all-star teams. The Kings got all the college all-stars you could ever want. They always have those talent, and they can never turn it into anything. They're sitting there at number 8. I think they should trade this pick because of everything I just told you. They pick in the top 10 every year. They need to get some established guys in there. They brought in Rudy Gay last year or during the midseason, and he actually played well for them. So, I don't, you know, Rudy Gay, Cousins, you know what I'm saying? You had Isaiah Thomas, who averages about 20 points a game, but I don't know if he's the future there at the point. What are you doing if you're running the Kings at 8?
That's the million-dollar question, because I'm looking at their team, and I mean, honestly, if I was the GM, I'd trade the pick as quickly as I possibly can, because – and they got a ton of, like, fours and, you know, power fours, basically, on their team. They're loaded at power forward. And Rudy Gay, you know, I still can't believe he's making $19 million. You know, he's making $19 million next year, and he's a good player, but he's not $19 million. You're talking about, you know, you're spending that much money on a guy who, you know, he should be the cornerstone of your franchise, and I don't see him ever being that type of a guy. Personally, I'd rather just trade the pick and get out of it. But if I'm forced to take somebody, I mean, I'm looking at what's out there, and there's really nothing out there that really entices me. And I'm guessing if I'm going to do that, you know, you just drafted Ben McLemore last year. You need help, I guess, at any position, I would assume. But I'm just going to go with the best player. And in this particular case, I'm going to go with a guy who doesn't have a perimeter game, but he's small enough possibly to play small forward, but he's large enough to play power forward. But he's an elite athlete, and he can defend multiple positions. So I'm going Aaron Gordon, only because of the fact that I really don't know who else to take, to be honest. He and they need, you know, they just need help at certain positions. They just need talent. They got a lot of bodies, but they really don't have a overall ton of talent outside of, you know, Cousins in the middle. And I don't believe that Thomas is their long-term answer, a point guard. Ben McAvoy, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. And Rudy Gay, this could be the last year of his contract. So, for me, I'm going to go with Aaron Gordon, and at least with the versatility, I can find a spot for him.
I agree. I think that's a solid pick there. Aaron Gordon went to Arizona, was a freshman there, played very well, really gets after it on the glass. He really works hard, and he's a very good athlete. I like that about him. His game's a little raw, but I think he can come around. And I think of the guys that are left, he probably has the greatest likelihood of turning into a star. And so if you're Sacramento and you're stuck there, that's pretty much what you have to do. You have to take the guy who has the greatest likelihood of turning into a star. Charlotte Hornets at number 9. Mike Jordan got him in the playoffs last year, man. And you know, I think they played in the East. That's how that happened. So you have the Hornets. They crept into the playoffs and got bounced out pretty quickly. But they had Al Jefferson played phenomenal this past year. He was all NBA talent. And you have Kemba Walker, who is quietly becoming a very good point guard. You have Michael Carter-Williams with the most broken jump shot. I mean, not Michael Carter-Williams. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist with the most broken jump shot I've ever seen.
Ever.
And then you got a few other pieces in place. Gerald Henderson's a nice ball player. What are you doing if you're them at 9? I think they should also, they're rumored to be potentially trading the pick also. So what are you doing at 9 with Charlotte?
If I can't trade the pick and I'm stuck there, I'm going to need more scoring. I need somebody who can score some points, especially at the wing position. Like you said, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist has the worst jump shot one of, if not the worst jump shot in the league. He can't score. It's a great thing that he can defend wing players, but, you know, his inability to score on offense really, really hurt them, because once Al Jefferson went down, it was just Kemba Walker and nobody else. And I think that's, to me, they need somebody who can fill up the basket. It doesn't necessarily have to start, but have to give him some type of points off the wing. Now, you could go two different areas. You can go Nick Stauskas from Michigan, the shooting guard, or you can go Doug McDermott, the small forward from Creighton. For this particular draft, I'm taking Doug McDermott just because of his shooting ability and his ability to score. The only question I have for him is his ability to get his shot off in the NBA, because he reminds me to a certain degree of Luke Jackson, the stiff that we drafted with the Cavs back, I think it was like 2004 or something like that. That was the one thing that scared me about Luke Jackson, and the same thing scares me about Doug McDermott is his inability or ability to get his shot off in the NBA. But he can score, he can fill up the basket, and I think he provides a much-needed score and punch for that particular team. So that's what I would go with.
I agree with part of that assessment. I would say, first of all, I want to say that the new uniforms, if y'all haven't seen the new uniforms for the Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, they're great.
Fire. There's absolute fire. Those uniforms is fire. But beyond that, and they got the name back, so that's all good for Charlotte. But beyond that, so I agree that between Kemba, who's not a great perimeter shooter, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who's a horrible perimeter shooter, they need shooting. I think that they would probably should go Stauskas in that scenario, or Gary Harris maybe, but or possibly Rodney Hood. But yeah, I wouldn't be mad at them if they took Doug McDermott. The funny thing about that is that, you know, they once upon a time Michael Jordan was running the Hornets or the Bobcats, and he had the opportunity to take a lottery pick, and he picked about a 6'8" white dude from a small school that could really score in college. He went by the name of Adam Morrison, and it didn't go so well. So I wonder if that's going to be in the back of Jordan's mind at all if he decides to go with Dougie McBuckets. I'm not sure, man. But I like McDermott. I think he's like a poor man's 6'8 Dirk Nowitzki. You know what I'm saying? So, but again, he's got to get creative. He's going to get a shot off. So we're back to the 76ers at number 10 now. Now, under your scenario, they had Julius Randle at number 3. What are they doing now at number 10?
And I think it comes down to the point where they could go. They're going to need a shooting guard. I think they have their guy in Carter Williams, and I think they'll have their post guy in Randle, and Nerlens Noel as the rim blocker. So now they need another scorer. If they keep Thaddeus Young and move him over to the 3, that's great. So they're going to need a 2. So he's either Gary Harris or it's going to be Stauskas. For me, in this particular draft, it's going to be Stauskas. I love his game. I love his competitiveness. I love the way he plays basketball, man. I mean, Gary Harris may be the most talented, but Stauskas has a lot of heart, and he's going to stay in the league a long time because of his competitive fire and just the fact that he loves to play, man. I hate Michigan for a lot of different reasons, but I love watching Michigan basketball mainly because of this guy. I love how he's just clutch, and he feels so many different roles for that team. And in this Philadelphia's case, he's going to provide a scoring punch that they desperately need. And he's going to light the scoreboard up. So he's the perfect fit for me for that team at this point.
So now you have Philadelphia with Michael Carter Williams and Nerlens Noel coming off injury. You couple that with Julius Randle and Nick Stauskas. Not terrible. I think I like Stauskas' game too. What I really like about Nick Stauskas is that he's like 6'6". You know, I thought he was like 6'2 or 6'3 watching him play at Michigan. He's tall, so that really works well for him at the next level. Those extra 3 inches will come in handy, getting his shot off and what have you. And they need that shooting in Philadelphia because they've been a bad shooting team for quite a long time. Let's see. Denver Nuggets, 11th pick as we move along. They fell out of the playoffs this past year, as I thought they would. And they have some talented pieces on this team. But this is what happens when you have a team with a lot of depth and a lot of young talent, and you never cash it in on a star player. You know, you have to take those pieces and you got to move them for that superstar player at some point. Now they're rumored to be trying to get Kevin Love, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's kind of like the Bulls back in the mid-2000s when I was screaming from a rooftop at the time that they should be trading. Remember the baby Bulls? And they had Ben Gordon and Nocioni and a couple other pieces. And I'm like, and Luol Deng. And I'm like, why don't they package that stuff and get Kevin Garnett? And they never did it. And it wasn't until Derrick Rose saved the day that they became the Bulls again. But Denver, you know, and they tried to do it with Iguodala, I guess, but that didn't work out in Denver. But they're a great scoring team, great rebounding team for Brian Shaw, horrible defensive team. I think they need some defense on the perimeter. But what are you having them doing at 11?
Looking at their roster, I mean, they have very good. They're a very good offensive team. To me, though, I think the one spot or the one position I think that they are really they're really lacking at this point is the two guard. You got Gallinari, you got Wilson Chandler, you got a lot of different other wing players, but you really don't have a two guard, a guy who can put in the backcourt with Ty Lawson and actually, you know, and run the floor with. For me, I'm looking at Gary Harris from Michigan State, and basically because of his ability to light it up, 6'4", one thing that that Tom Izzo preaches is defense. So you're gonna have a pretty good defensive minded wing player, and I think that's gonna help them on the defensive side as well. So that's the guy who I'm taking if I'm the Denver Nuggets.
I think that's a good pick for them. He reminds me a little of Aaron Aflalo, who used to play in Denver a couple of years ago and is now in Orlando. I think he's a scrappy competitor on defense, Gary Harris. It's funny, is whenever I watch Michigan State, Gary Harris didn't do anything. So then when this... I don't know what that was. That doesn't mean anything. It's just whenever I happen to see them play, he wasn't balling. And then now I look at all the mocks and everything, and he's like a top 10 pick. And I'm like, really? So... You know, here we are at number 11, but I think that's a good pick for them. I really do. Number 12, Orlando again. We had or you had them taking Dante Exum at number 4. So what are they doing now at number 12?
I'm looking at their small forward position. I think that's what that's another spot that they need to upgrade if they can. A guy who I like because. I've only seen YouTube of him and certain other videos, but I really haven't, you know, seen him live. But I like his game. I like his instincts and his ability to play in transition or in half court. I'm looking at Dario Saric from Croatia. That's a small forward, 6'10", 235. The concerns is that he's turnover prone and his shot's inconsistent, but I think he has a chance to really develop there in Orlando. And like I say, they're not winning anytime soon. But I think he can help them in a lot of different ways because of his versatility. He reminds me of parts of a game that I've seen. His game reminds me of Boris Diaw. I happened to see Boris Diaw a video with him and Tony Parker when they were 19. And of course he was a lot smaller, a lot slimmer. He didn't eat a lot of French toast at that time. So. But he was able to, I mean, his ability to post up and his ability to shoot and be creative with the basketball, I see a lot of that in Saric's game. So I think he would fit what the Magic are trying to do long term. So that's who I would go with.
Okay, and now with Saric, they compare him to Tony Kukoc. I think he's from Croatia also. I think Kukoc was, I believe he was. They say Dario Saric is kind of a point forward, like Diaw, to your point. And which I thought that a great fit for him would be Phoenix at number 14, because Phoenix actually, you know, for all the talent they have with those two guards, Dragic and Eric Bledsoe and Gerald Green running around doing his thing and the Morris twins, Phoenix was actually 29th in the league in assists this year. And so I think that they could use a guy like Saric, a really unselfish player who can kind of from each the high post and the low post negotiate that offense. But if he's going at number 12 to Orlando, yeah, I can't say that's a bad pick there. I probably would have gone maybe Rodney Hood maybe at that spot, maybe. But I mean, I think that that's still a good pick. I don't, you know, basically Orlando's core now is looking like Aaron Aflalo, Tobias Harris, Vucevic, Oladipo, Exum, and Saric. Can they win with that, Rob Hennigan? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I mean, the East stinks still.
In the East, maybe.
Maybe. 13, real quick, Minnesota Timberwolves on the clock. Obviously, they're going to play a big factor in everything that happens on Thursday night, whether or not they decide to move Kevin Love, which they should, but I don't know that they will. It feels like they're going to be making two different picks. They got to make one pick if he stays, and they got to make another pick if he goes, because I think it could potentially change. You know, I mean, if the focal point of the franchise is out the picture, I think it changes your draft strategy, right? So if you're Flip Saunders running the T-Wolves, what you doing up there, Mark?
I'm looking at if they keep Kevin Love, I'm going Rodney Hood from Duke because he fills a need as small forward or as a wing player. I think he 42% from behind the arc. That's nothing to sneeze at. I think he'll fit their scheme. If they trade Kevin Love, then they have to start all over from scratch. And I think if they do that, they're gonna have to find a replacement. I think for this particular part of the draft, I think Adrian Payne from Michigan State would be a good spot. That would be a good spot for him to fall to, and I would put him there. So it's one of the two. I think if you know, like you said, contingency plan one. If they keep Kevin Love, it'll be Rodney Hood. If they don't keep Kevin Love, it'll be Adrian Payne.
Now, what's good about that is Adrian Payne is a. I like Adrian Payne a lot, actually. He's a big guy. He likes to rebound. He got a big body, and he can shoot from the perimeter. I think he's a very solid ball player. I believe he is a senior, though. So seniors tend not to go in the lottery, or very you know, people tend to shy away from those older guys in the lottery. I think it could work out if they give up Kevin Love. I think the floor spacing stays pretty much consistent. Maybe not. He's not as good of a shooter as Love is, but he can still knock it down from 20 feet, I feel like. And then you have to figure, too, that if they trade Kevin Love, they're going to be bringing in some established ball players like Klay Thompson or David Lee if the Golden State thing comes to fruition. So they're going to still be trying to compete next year. And I think Adrian Payne works in favor of that. You know, bringing in an older ball player makes more sense under that scenario. And I like Rodney Hood's game as well. He's a polished kid, I feel like, at Duke. And like you said, he can hit the three. I think either one of those would be decent picks there. And then lastly, real quick, the Phoenix Suns, as I touched on them a moment ago, they're at the 14 slot. Barely missed the playoffs. Really exciting team. They like to get out and run under Jeff Hornacek. What do you think they should do at 14, Mark?
If they are at 14 and you brought up Dario Saric going there, I think he's like the perfect fit for them there. But there's also another guy who may not get as much fanfare, but I really like for the Suns at that spot. And he played point guard in college, but he's basically like he's 6'9", 230. You know what I'm saying? Or he's listed as 6'9". I think he's more like 6'6", 230. And to me, that's Kyle Anderson from UCLA. Because he's averaged 6 assists a game, his ability to be versatile, I think he's naturally going to be a small forward in this league. And I think with him, in this case, being the next point forward, I think he's the low-budget version of Dario Saric. I don't think he doesn't have as much upside as Saric does, but I think he fits the style of play that, you know, Hornacek wants to run, and I think he can be magical with the ball in his hand. So he does have turnover problems, I get that, but I think for the fit, for the type of offense that they're running, just like we talked about before about quarterbacks in April, you know, style and system fits basketball players too. So I think the style of play that the Suns are running, where they're getting up and down the floor, I think Anderson's game will actually transfer or transpose a lot better with a team like Phoenix than like a half court round and pound type of team, like, let's say, for example, like Memphis. The styles just doesn't match up. And I think for this particular player and this team, that's where his talents will fit best.
I don't particularly care for Kyle Anderson's game, but under this scenario, I definitely see how that could work. I mean, he's similar to Dario Saric in the fact that he's got some size and he can move the ball around. So I think that might not be a bad fit there. So let's recap the Mark Draft, the 2014 NBA Mark Draft here on a Hip Hop Sports Support podcast. At the top, Cleveland Cavaliers with the one pick, Mark has them taking, or this again, if Mark was running the team, he would take Jabari Parker at 1, Milwaukee number 2, Andrew Wiggins number 3, Philadelphia Julius Randle number 4, Orlando Dante Exum number 5, Utah Noah Vonleh number 6, Boston Celtics Joel Embiid number 7, LA Lakers Marcus Smart number 8, Aaron Gordon to the Kings number 9, Dougie McDermott to the Charlotte Hornets number 10. The Philadelphia 76ers, again, this time with Nick Stauskas out of Michigan. Number 11, Michigan State guard, Gary Harris going to the Denver Nuggets. At 12, Dario Saric, international player, going to the Orlando Magic. 13, if Kevin Love stays, Rodney Hood out of Duke. If he goes, Adrian Payne out of Michigan State. And number 14, Kyle Anderson to the Phoenix Suns. Mark, in the brief little bit of time we have left, if I have any, let me throw a couple names at you of guys that I like. Zach LaVine, left him out from UCLA. He's out of the lottery, but I think he's got a lot of talent. He's a crazy athlete, and he can shoot from the perimeter. Not much of a defender, though. Other guys I like, James Young, TJ Warren, Glenn Robinson III, Shabazz Napier, Clay Anthony Early, Markel Brown, and my guy Aaron Kraft out of Ohio State. If he could just shoot, if Aaron Kraft could shoot, he would be a late first-round pick. He can't shoot, but I'm praying that he gets drafted. Any of those guys or anybody else that you want to touch on real quick before we get out of here?
The one guy I really want to stress is Glenn Robinson III. I love this kid's game, and I think they've been trying to force him down as being a small forward. And I think in the right system, you know, almost like Tim Hardaway Jr. was last year. If he gets in the right system, he gets the right team, I think he could be a surprise player. His father had a totally different game than him, and they need to stop comparing his game to his dad's, because the third game is much more refined than what his dad's were. His dad was much more physical, and he liked to get in the low post and that type of thing, but he could shoot outside too. He's a guy that I really want to tell people that, you know, keep your eyes open for him, and also Clay Anthony Early for Wichita State. He's also, to me, he's one of those guys I try to keep my eye on him as well, because if he goes to the right team, he can actually really help a team out, because if not from a starter standpoint, I think he'll be a really good role player off the bench type of a guy, but I think he could do some damage as well.
I could not agree more. Those are just a list of names of guys that I like. I love Clay Anthony Early. I really like James Young out of Kentucky too. I think he's a little slept on. And Glenn Robinson III and Shabazz Napier. We know that kid's a winner as well. So thank you for joining us this evening, Mark, on the 2014 NBA edition of the Mark Draft Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We about to sign out, y'all. Hit us up on Twitter at HHS Report and check the website. We have an article on, again, the NBA draft and what it means to be a killer and all that stuff. Again, check us out. We're going to do an album review on 50 Cent's Animal Ambition. And we have the podcast always. Hit us up on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and comment. And hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. And tell all your friends, man. Mark, thank you for joining us. We love you. And we out of here, y'all. Peace.